Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Paul.
And I'm Karen. We know stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
Hi, and welcome to this Coloplast Professional podcast. Today, I am going to be joined by a very special guest, Natasha Rolls, the clinical lead at the Bristol Royal. But just before I introduce Natasha, I'm just going to let people know that I am currently sitting in a hotel room in Birmingham, getting ready to do a masterclass about asking the right questions and psychological support that clinical nurses can provide to their patients. So if there's a very big, unwieldy edit in this podcast, it just means that I'm sitting on a little bit of a dodgy Wi-Fi. So I'm giving you that kind of apology in advance. But now I've said that little apology, good morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Paul. Thank you very much for inviting me to the podcast.
No trouble at all. No trouble. Because I know it's welcome back, isn't it? Because you've already done one with us.
Yep, that's right, yep. And I still came back for a second one, eh?
You came back for more. The reason I kind of invited you back was because I know that we covered so many topics in the previous podcast. It's almost the 101 of stoma nursing after sighting. And that's discussed some of the long-term stomal complications. And kind of in your opinion, what the kind of prevalence is from, you know, because obviously we can look at the research, we can look at articles, but what your opinion, some of the more common stomal complications are and what those complications you see in your clinical role. So in terms of complications, what would you say your top three or five long-term complications?
Your top really is your peristomal hernia, I would say. Like a long-term chronic skin. You know, those patients that have sat on acute skin, so it's become chronic. So you've got the hyperkeratosis, really rough, really ragged skin that makes it very difficult for a pouch to adhere. I would say prolapse is another one that is a longer term complication. Stenosis, sometimes that lovely colostomy at the beginning that then you have a peristomal hernia and then that poor stoma gets pulled in and then starts to stenose. Those would be my real heart sink top problems, really, in your long-term ostomate. I suppose for me as well, it's a psychological, you know, when everybody first has their stoma, their surgery, we're very positive, we're very supportive, we're very proactive. We ask them how they feel. We know they're going through trauma. When they're a year, 18 months, 2 years along, all their relatives have got a bit fed up with them being poorly. Do you know what I mean? Everybody's gone a bit, and we don't see them as often, if at all, if we're honest. And so when they do present, perhaps after a while of not being in clinic, there's a sort of resigned, not depression, but a lowness of mood that I think is quite distressing, actually, as a clinician, to see one of your patients struggling with that. Does that resonate with you?
It does. It definitely resonates. And again, it's because there's, you know, there is that term, you know, the lost ostomate. I'm not keen on that term, lost ostomate, but there is the term lost ostomate out there. And it kind of does resonate because, as you said, you know, it's people kind of get not lost in the system, but they kind of become just aware that things just keep happening. And it's that unknown, is this normal? Is this wrong? And it's the amount of patients that I see that, you know, when you do see them and they say, oh yeah, I've been leaking for 6 months. And you're thinking, why haven't you, you know, asked for help before then? And it is, as you said, it's that almost that heart sink moment where you think to yourself, I can sort this out for you. You know, and it's that, as you said, it's that emotional loneliness that some people can actually have with a stoma, especially if they've had, you know, again, almost irrespective of their pathway to stoma formation, be it IBD, be it cancer pathway or a functional pathway. They have this period where it's loads of investigations, loads of clinic appointments, all of these sorts of things where they have lots and lots of contact with the NHS, with doctors, with nurses, and then suddenly, potentially, you know, they have their stoma formed. Lots of the times, the medical issues, surgical issues that have led to stoma formation have dissipated, and then suddenly they're almost out in this wilderness.
And also we add to that, I think, because our, you know, I always say when I have students or new staff, our role is to empower patients, empower them to be independent. So we have to then find a line between empowering you to be independent, to live a normal, full life, but also to remember we are still here. You're still our patient, even though you're well and you're coping. And you're right. Because they feel they are well and coping, and we've sort of launched them on the world. And maybe we do that because we say, you're doing so well, you're managing so well on your own. and actually, maybe we should, you know, it's sort of a reflection to think you are managing so well, but things can change. So please come back. You can always come back. And you can always come back, even if you're just feeling a bit peed off. That's okay too. If nothing's going particularly wrong physiologically or practically, but you just wanted to talk it through. But there is a real challenge there, isn't there? Because we are also trying to stop them being patients and just launching them back as ostomates, competent ostomates, living a life.
That is the challenge. It's knowing where to, I want to use the word cut the apron strings, but it's also knowing that, as I said, letting that individual know that they can come back into the service. You are never discharged from the stoma service. The stoma service is there to serve you. You know, that is what we are there for. And I always say this, you know, that's why we put our tunics on in the morning. That's why we go to work every day. It's to serve you. It's to ensure that you are living the best life possible. And again, that kind of ties us back into these long-term complications that you can have for the stoma. And you mentioned the parastomal hernia or the outward body profile as well. And I know that I was always told by a very experienced surgeon to run by the duck principle when it comes to herniation, which is if it looks like a duck, if it swims like a duck and it sounds like a duck, it's not going to be a horse. So, you know, because obviously we know that the only way to properly diagnose a hernia is to, you know, is to scan them. But in your opinion, when it comes to hernias, how many of your patients on your, you know, on your books, do you actually get that clinical diagnosis of a hernia if they aren't symptomatic? Do you just treat as a hernia with support, you know, be that the physical support, where emotional, psychological support, potentially more regular clinic reviews, just to make sure that, I said, the stenosis, retraction, all those sorts of things. How do you kind of deal, you know, in the longer term with patients with hernias?
So we have a couple of surgeons who won't say the H word without a CT scan. And I think they still scan them lying down, don't they? So you're unlikely to see a hernia. So clinically, if they present, even if the outward body profile isn't pronounced, but they have all the symptomology. So my tummy aches so much by the end of the day. I've got altered function. You know, I don't feel the same. It feels like there's a bulge there, which is worse by the end of the day. Then we treat them as if they have a hernia. It's really challenging, I think, the whole support wear thing, because as stoma care nurses, we are becoming increasingly, and it's right, aware of cost efficiencies. And hernia support garments can be very expensive. And obviously they can have up to three, level two or three garments on prescription a year. And I think for comfort, actually, wearing a support garment, even before you've developed classically a hernia, but certainly once you have symptoms of a hernia, I think it's really positive to wear them. But there is no clinical data, particularly the supports, that they prevent them getting worse, that they prevent them in the first place. I think in terms of a very pronounced outward body area, a body profile, I think wearing a support garment is almost essential for discretion. And as soon as you see those patients that you put it on and they're like, oh, thank goodness it doesn't show anymore. And because that is, for me, that is often why patients present. You can see my stoma bag under my clothes and you didn't used to be able to. And that for me would be awful. You've just accepted, acknowledged, got used to, found clothes that you're comfortable in. And then suddenly all of that's turned upside down because it's sticking out more than it did. So we do advocate support garments. If I'm really honest, I'm not sure about compliance. There are some that are wedded to their support garment and will always be wearing it when they come into clinic. And then there are others that say, yeah, I wear it. I just didn't put it on today. Compliance is an issue. And if compliance is an issue and I'm suggesting that we're spending £35 to £60 three times a year for each patient, I have to really question my practice.
Because again, so on the similar thing, so, you know, you were talking there, you know, obviously they can get them on prescription. Do you ever advocate, you know, the off the shelf, go to Marks and Spencer's kind of support? Do you recommend that first line before the prescription?
Yeah, so it would depend really. If you've got somebody who's a scaffolder, then no, you need a prescription and you'll need a level three. But if you've got someone who wants to go to a wedding and they want it to be very discreet and they want to wear a nice outfit, then yeah, your Marks and Spencers, Lycra knickers, even your Spanx, that sort of thing is absolutely, it's very individually tailored, isn't it? By this point, hopefully, we're not talking about having a peristomal hernia or a pronounced outward body profile immediately. So you've normally got a relationship. You normally know the patient. That's the other thing as well, I think. You normally know what their compliance will be like. As a clinical specialist, I think you do tailor your advice to the individual that's sitting in front of you.
A term that you use quite often from when I've heard you talk is that building that therapeutic relationship. And it's part and parcel of that therapeutic relationship is understanding the ostomy. It's understanding the person sitting in front of you.
And understanding what they want from you. Because sometimes, bizarrely, they will present with a significant outward body profile, with some significant functional issues. And you can make suggestions about what you think will help, taking fiber gel, even if it's possible, talking about maybe irrigating instead of. But then you realize very quickly, actually, they don't want a solution. They simply want to be heard. They want you to say, yes, you have got altered function because you have a hernia there. Yes, that is difficult to manage. Yes, you are doing really well and you can come back and talk to me about it whenever you want to. And that's enough. And that's, I suppose, then goes back to what you were talking about, and I share your dislike of the phrase, but the lost ostomate, that's what they're missing out on, isn't it? Because it may be that there isn't a solution, they don't want a solution, they just need to be heard. And that's what I think we need to get through to them, as well as the don't put up with sore skin, don't put up with feeling a bit rubbish about what's going on. Come back, because we can talk about it.
It all comes back to the psychological skill. And that is one of the things that I think that as clinical nurse specialists, we really need to focus in on, is that are we providing the people that need us, ask us for help, are we providing enough psychological support and enough psychological care to them? When is it you refer on? When is it do you think this is out of my scope of expertise? Do you have guidelines set in? Is it almost this unspoken thing? Does it depend very much on clinical expertise? So where do you think, you know, especially so it's either referring to surgeons or referring to, say, dermatologists for a dermatology review. Where do you sit within your team and that?
So we have an unspoken, so we do have a what they called SOP, about management of sore skin and yeah, very much using ASCN guidelines about escalation of using steroids, the fludroxycortide tape or your inhaler or the scalp, Betnovate scalp lotion. Yeah. That's a formalized pathway. Mm. We have an unwritten, informal use each other as a resource. So we have quite a mix of experience in the team. So that's a good thing. Although, you know, being the person who's supposedly the most experienced doesn't mean you're the one that will be the one with the answer. It's very difficult, Paul, for me. We've referred a few patients over the last couple of years to dermatology, and the dermatologists are marvelous people, but they are a little bit tunnel visioned. Mm. So unless it can have a greasy cream on it, they don't really know what to do with it. And obviously, so in all honesty, so there was one patient that had a long-term really poor, actually it wasn't even under the barrier of the base plate. It was sort of wider than that. And in the end, I it was probably, I probably did about 4 visits with her before I thought, I'm anxious that there is something much more significant going on, and referred her to dermatology, and they did take skin scrapings because it just felt to me that we weren't getting anywhere. I think, again, it's individual, isn't it? How much is the patient prepared to work with you? How much do you feel you're making progress? How effective is your follow-up? Because when you're dealing with something at a very acute, actually, or even the chronic skin that presents later, you do need to see them regularly, or they need to be competent at sending you a picture that doesn't include the cat and their slippers, you know, that is actually of their peristomal skin. So I think that's individual. I think we need to see referring or asking for advice less as failure and more just as working as a team. So if I refer to dermatology, I do try to go with the patient so that I say to the dermatologist, well, no, we won't be able to use that because the bag won't stick. Because I understand that normally a good greasy topical lotion with a steroid cream works marvellous for most skin conditions. I mean, obviously, that is a massive denigration of all dermatologists. but yeah, so I tend to try and go with the patient because I want to put across what maybe the patient might not be able to. Referring back to surgeons, I do find this my biggest challenge in terms of peristomal hernia and prolapse, because you and I know how, particularly with prolapse, how likely it is to reoccur. And with peristomal hernia, that's a big operation. And lots of patients think, oh, yeah, well, if I just get it operated on, he said he can put it back in and put some mesh in, it'd be great. And you just think, oh, do you know what I mean? I don't know how much better it will be afterwards. For a start, whether you will be in a significantly better position, and you will have to be undergoing major surgery, particularly if they've got a peristomal hernia but a really nice stoma. I think, oh no, we might lose the really nice stoma.
Yeah, it's so different. You're thinking to yourself, and again, that's where, you know, you get this kind of the balance between the psychological and emotional care and the physical care, because the peristomal hernia, the outward body profile, is really affecting them psychologically, emotionally. But as you said, you know, they've actually got a really nice stomy. They get a really good seal. They've got a really good routine. And it's that thing of, where do you draw the line? Where is, you know, where does this psychological, emotional need and care overtake the physical care? You're almost in this juxtaposition, aren't you? And it's like that decision inertia. Whichever way I go, potentially something's going to go wrong. And I don't know about you, but I always used to utilize other clinical nursemen. And again, you know, I know we chuckled when we said, you know, we in relation to the dermatologists, but I used to find sometimes that if you, and I'm a firm believer in making friends in the NHS. So tissue viability nurses, if you've got a dermatology nurse specialist, sometimes you get almost, as I said, I used to do referrals, a nurse-to-nurse referral, because sometimes if you can build up that almost that really good professional relationship with another CNS, utilize the power of other clinical nurse specialists, because a lot of the times they can see things from your point of view as well. So it's not just this, as you said, this tunnel vision. But refer, you know, if you've got somebody who's got complex ulcers, secondary, you know, whatever the cause is, be it folliculitis, pyoderma, etc., then sometimes I've found that, you know, if they're non-healing and that sort of thing, rather than going to surgeons, dermatologists, actually going to the CNS, because then if you build up that relationship with them, it actually makes your life that much, and the life of your, you know, the individuals we look after and we care for, that much better, because it's not tunnel vision. You're likely to get to see them sooner. And if they are an inpatient, most of the times those clinical nurse specialists will come in and see them on the wards with you, if you've seen them an inpatient or if they're booking a clinic. So I don't know whether you've actually utilized other clinical nurse specialists in those situations.
Yeah, definitely. Tissue viability, we work quite closely with. I mean, I always say, after all, we do, as soon as a bit of poo comes out of somebody's abdomen, then it's ours, not theirs, isn't it? So we we do share that. I think also, when I talked about that informal pathway within the team, sometimes it's just a fresh pair of eyes. Sometimes you've been laboring with this for so long, a colleague will come in and oh, what have you thought about, or have you tried, or I think that looks like, and you're like, oh God, of course. But it's because we're so eager to get it right, because we want to find the solution, we want to make this better, sometimes we're not relaxed enough to find the solution. Do you know what I mean? When you sort of sit back and relax a little bit, the solution or it becomes clearer. When you're very anxious about finding the solution, I think you have less ability to think and see clearly. So sometimes it literally is just a fresh pair of eyes, which is why the team is so good. But you're right, that's why the wider team is so good as well. And you can just, you know, somebody else will say, well, I've seen this before, actually. It was on a leg, and I did this. And you think, oh, okay, that, do you know what I mean? That because we've all got experience, and even if we're in the same specialism, we've got different experience to each other, and we need to be better at calling on that and better at appreciating each other's experience, I think, and valuing each other and supporting each other. You know, this is a mantra of mine, but really bigging each other up. And so that's, you know, yeah, that's a brilliant idea. That's a, you know, tissue viability. You have a very specific specialism, and I can call on that, just like you call on mine when, like, you've got a vac and then suddenly there's poo in the vac.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick, pass it on.
You put your cape on and you rush down, absolutely, straight away.
Yes, swoop on down.
Swoop on down. That's it. I think it's one of those ones whenever we're talking about long-term complications, it always comes down, for me, the two main things are the skill of the stoma nurse. It's that looking outside the box. And you mentioned it there. It's we are a jack of all trades and master of all. We have to be, because of the type of patients that we look after. But also we need to know when to actually say, do you know what, I need help and support with this. Asking for help when assessing, you know, your patients, when you have potentially got your blinkers on, isn't failure. Just like we've said before with the ostomates, when they say, you know, I didn't want to come, you know, I feel like a failure. Why am I failing? Why am I struggling? You can flick that coin over to that of the CNS, where it is a case of sometimes we do need to just draw that line and say, do you know what? I need some help here. I need somebody else's advice. It's not failure. It's human. And by doing that, the likelihood of actually making mistakes or, you know, not doing the best possible care is actually reduced by just asking a friend, a colleague to say, can you come and just put an eyeball on this for me, just to make sure that I'm not missing anything?
Yeah, and I do that often with patients' consent to having photographs taken, and I will then use those photographs and share those photographs with colleagues. In fact, that gentleman I said who's going to be recited, I just in passing, because I'm that kind of crazy person in the corridor. Here, look at this bad skin. And it was the surgeon that went, jeepers, you know, I need to see him in clinic, and I need to see whether there's anything I should do about this surgically. So yeah, it is, it's not, we just have to get over ourselves a bit. And you're right, that's a very good way to look at it. If we're asking our patients to do that, then we need to do that too, don't we? And also, if we're thinking that this pathway, this journey that they're on is a collaboration, so it's a partnership, them and us, and break down that them and us, ostomates, stoma care nurses, it's a partnership. Because, you know, you've also had those patients that ring you, it's bad, they get to clinic, oh, I did such and such, and they did something really, Pseudocreme lately, oh, I put Pseudocreme on it, and my whole body is like, oh my God. And then they take the bag off, they go, and it worked, and you think, oh, well, I'm never going to suggest that, but well done.
Well done. I'm twitching thinking about it, but yeah. Well done.
Yeah. Literally, yeah. But then, you know, I can only say, well, that's amazing. That's brilliant. Well done. Please don't do it again.
Oh, as I say, we've all been there in clinic, in those clinical situations where you just have that heart sink moment. You think to yourself, what am I going to find when I remove the base plate? You remove the base plate and you go, oh, it worked. Okay. Yeah. Well, Natasha, as always, it has been absolutely lovely having you on. Thank you so much for all your insights. Have you got any last, you know me, I always like a good top tip. If you did have to give people one last big top tip, what top tip would it be?
That we all need to develop, maintain, and really champion a formal pathway of follow-up for our patients, because we need to start now preventing the lost ostomates of the future.
Perfect. Thank you so much. No mean feat, no mean feat, but it's possible. It is definitely possible, and I think it is essential as well. So, Natasha, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and I can't wait to talk to you again at the next podcast. So thank you.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.